Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today my guest is award-winning author J.D. Seamus. He is joining us to talk about his first novel, Last Call. J.D. was born and spent his early childhood in one of the worst ghettos of Belfast before immigrating to the U.S. at the age of 8. One of 9 brothers, he is the only survivor today. J.D. was raised by his uncle, a sergeant on the NYPD, in the rough 5-point section of New York. He joined his local neighborhood gang and began participating in minor illegal activities only to discover that he was a terrible criminal. He was demoted to lookout because of a slow-running ability, then demoted again after his gang peers discovered he was legally blind. He was told by the gang leaders to continue his education, and he was a very poor criminal, and so he did. He remains close to the remnants of his original gang, who later in life became mafia dons and capos, a rabbi, 2 Catholic priests, and a bishop, captains of industry, movie stars, TV personalities, and sports heroes. It's an amazing, amazing life story here. Upon completing his education, J.D. worked on Wall Street, initially then began a venture capital firm and a hedge fund simultaneously. He retired early but still runs a small mutual fund for his friends. Last Call is his first novel, but certainly not the last, as he has 4 completed novels waiting in the wings. He now lives in Central Florida with his wife and 2 dogs and is working on novel number 6. He is a lifelong Braves, a Jaguar fan, and bleeds either blue or teal depending on the season. And you can find out more about this very colorful author at jdseamusbooks.com. So quite a bio, J.D. Welcome to the program.
Wow. It's when you hear it like that, it's amazing.
That's your life.
Wow.
Well, you know, Last Call has been out for several months, and obviously congratulations are in order.
You've won 2
awards.
Thank you.
It's incredible for a first book.
I've been very lucky with it. It's such a tough book to pigeonhole. It's a mystery, and it's a love story, and it's absolute dating scene nightmares, and it's a crime job drama, a lot of action and mayhem, but most of that is kind of accidental, I guess. But it's a story of friendships and how far friends go to for the sake of loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a great time writing it, and I hope it's half as much fun reading as it was to write, because it certainly was a ball.
Well, the reviews are fantastic, so obviously people are really enjoying it as well, and I'm hearing a lot that it is really fast-paced, and readers are loving that, and I'm wondering, when you were writing it, was it coming out of you that quickly?
It really was. You have to go through the whole process, but I probably wrote it in maybe 3 or 4 months, and I was, still working full very fast. Of course, then you do the 8 to 10 audits that takes years.
Yes.
But it did. It came out fast, which is so much fun to write. All of them have been that way, though.
It's amazing how many books you actually have in the final stage.
This was a hobby for me.
Mm-hmm.
I had some health problems, and kind of was really forced to kind of slow down and take it easy. And I started writing. I had a lot of friends who always pushed me to do that,
Mm-hmm.
And I finally did, and it's just been a blast.
Mm. Well, how is your eyesight today, and how does that affect your writing? Gotta ask.
That's probably average. My eyesight is average. I was just a terrible lookout,
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you want your lookouts to have good, really good eyesight. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or that's, my guys did anyway.
Yeah, that's so funny. I want to know as well, you're picking fiction to write in, but your life story is so incredible. And I'm just wondering why you're not writing about your own life, or maybe you are.
I think a lot of it is. A lot of it is. I'm not completely sure. I probably have to wait for a couple of more people to die, I think, to start writing about my own life.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them, I think, we get a little nervous. As a matter of fact, I had to run the first one by a couple of people you know, to make sure that, you know, that I didn't say anything about them and didn't disclose any, you know, nasty little details or whatever.
And then you'd be looking over your shoulder for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and since I have bad eyesight, you know, to begin with, I don't want to look over my shoulder.
Yeah, no. That's so funny. Well, tell us how Last Call happened and how this whole storyline came about.
Oddly, it was my favorite bar, and it was on 6th Avenue between, I guess, 58th and 56th Street. I lived in Midtown Manhattan. It was the bar I went to, and actually it was an Italian bar. It wasn't an Irish bar, but I it was more fun to do it as an Irish bar. And it was just one of the strangest bars in the world. You know, it was right in the middle of the, you know, the TV district, so we had all the networks there. But we also had, you know, two or three of the crime families, you know, drank there and had a good time, and a lot of sports personalities, and, you know, and it was kind of my neighborhood bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really had some major characters come in there. You know?
I'm picturing Cheers and Sopranos somehow together.
Oh, that would describe it perfectly.
Really?
That should be the title of a review or something, or it could be the sequel. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you do.
We sat in there with people. You know, you had, you know, John Gotti at one table, then you had Susan Lucci, you know, the soap opera star, you know, at the next table. So it was just great. It was fun.
It's amazing you were rubbing shoulders with these people. What years are we talking about?
This is 2000, 2001. Well, actually, probably 95 to about 2000, 2001.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so this, your novel is kind of based on your own experiences or roughly about a bar
roughly,
that you knew.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly, it was during, really, the parts of the book were right when 9/11 happened. So it was, mm-hmm. you know, it was kind of an odd time to be in New York, but it was kind of a neat time to be in New York.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, tell us a little about the story and some of the main characters. Nathan, you know, tell us a little bit more.
Well, Nathan was probably close to me, and I used myself to, you know, that was Nathan's description. You know, former ball player. I played ball for a while. I wasn't a big time player like Nathan. I was more of a, you know, of a substitute. But so Nathan was kind of me. Susan Lucci was kind of roughly based Nathan's girlfriend, you know, Terry, and Terry also happens to be my wife's name. But, it was just a composite of the characters that came in, and they were so diverse. I mean, you know, you had car salesmen, and you had models, and so, you know, it was just easy to draw from.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I had to cut a lot of them out during the rewrites because I had too many characters. I was spending 90% of the book just developing these people.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, that's why you're writing. That's why you're writing so many books. You've got a lot of characters, personalities
to
draw. Yeah,
the overflow was just going right in there, and it's odd. I think it's just probably me or my life or whatever, but everything turns into a comedy. And I've actually got a serial killer book that I'm working on, and it's kind of turning into a comedy. So I don't know whether I have to get junk that one or do something else. But,
oh, that's funny. I think there will be an audience for that, though.
There probably would.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, you seem to put a lot of humor into everything, into your life, and I mean, so this is just your style of writing, and I think it's really going to catch on from what I'm hearing.
I hope so. I hope so, because it's so much fun to do. And I guess it's the way I've always led my life. Really, it's always just been funny. And I guess some of the experiences I had weren't that funny, but I think the humor kind of probably helped me get by some of this, you know, some of the rougher times anyway.
Get through and be sane on the other side.
I don't know about sane.
Yeah.
You're pushing the envelope.
Here. Am I really? Well, so what, Nathan gets really sort of caught up in some dramas that happen with some of the people at the bar. Can you tell us a little more about
he's a transplant to New York. And, you know, I mean, we're a transplant somewhere, you know, at points at times. But I kind of go through the trials and tribulations that he has as a transplant. You know, the guy's working hard. He's doing, you know, he's doing an e-tail startup in New York. And, you know, he kind of gets lonely. He's tired of working all the time. So he starts looking for a neighborhood bar. And he kind of discovers Jimmy in a roundabout fashion. After going through, you know, some of the trendy fern bars in New York that he just didn't fit in. so he hits Jimmy, and Jimmy is really the character. Jimmy's the guy that, you know, he's everything to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
He's your neighborhood priest. He's the guy that runs charities. He's the guy that fences things. You know, he's everything to everybody. He's a matchmaker. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So and oddly, the guy, and he didn't own the bar, but the Italian bar, the real bar, but he was the manager of the bar and probably, you know, spent just more time in behind the bar, really tending to people's needs or just listening, being a good listener. Yeah.
So there was a real Jimmy.
There was a real Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He just had a lot of vowels in his last name, but you know,
mm-hmm.
There was a real Jimmy. But and that's the way it goes. He runs into people. Jimmy introduces him to people at the bar, and you know, they all discover later that, you know, that was the one thing that drew them all together was actually Jimmy. You know, Jimmy was such a great guy.
Mm-hmm. So he's kind of the pivot point.
He's the pivot point,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So interesting. Well, you know, I want to find out a little bit more about your past, if that's okay, Terrain.
Sure,
I mean, we're
sure.
Talking to go back all the way to Ireland, because I think that, you know, your past is really informative of your writing style and why you're going in this whole crime fiction direction. So tell us what you remember about Ireland. You left as a young boy.
Yeah, I remember it was just there was so much tension all the time. My relatives, my brother, my brothers, my father, uncles, everybody, you know, was in the IRA, and they were involved in the troubles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think half the time they were creating the troubles, but you know, that's just the way it went. But mm-hmm. Earliest memories were really something, you know, I blocked out for a long time, and then finally discovered it was kind of healthy not to do that. But my father, two uncles, and three brothers were all hung by the British.
That's amazing.
I had another two brothers that died in prison. And a couple of other brothers that were shot during illegal operations. And admittedly, all of these things were illegal. But yeah, it was. And my mother just didn't want to lose anybody else, so I was just sent packing. And I had she found a couple on the same boat that I went on, and they just kind of looked after me while I was kind of by myself. So that was scary, you know.
At what age was that? Eight?
That was eight years old, yeah.
Your brothers must have been quite a bit older than you.
They were.
Mm-hmm.
I was the baby.
Mm-hmm.
I was the baby. And it was probably a good thing.
Wow, that is amazing that you at that age were just kind of, you know, go along, send you off on a boat.
Know, it was weird. We came through Canada and we did the, you know, the illegal immigration thing.
Mm-hmm.
Most Europeans do, you know, you go through Canada and you kind of come over, you know,
mm-hmm.
come over in a car and you were just there shopping, you know,
yeah.
Honest officer, you know.
It's a long shopping trip.
So, my uncle, actually, who I lived with, the New York City cop just told me don't speak when we went through customs, and that's what I did, you know.
And you don't have any of an accent left.
No, I'm a very old person, so, you know.
Sometimes
I've been here for 52 years.
You have been here for a while, so that was quite a long time ago that you passed.
It was quite
through.
A long time ago.
Yeah. So you ended up with your uncle in New York City. He was NYPD, but
mm-hmm.
still you got into a gang, in a really rough gang too.
Well, it was a tough neighborhood. We were actually a very terrible gang, but I mean, we were kind of the gang that really couldn't shoot straight. We just had, kind of a social networking kind of thing, because we had everybody that couldn't make it in another gang, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all kind of terrible criminals, you know. Little criminals to be, I guess, but...
Criminal wannabe, so we're not talking about gang activity that we may associate with
today.
Oh,
no. This is robbing apples off a push.
Yeah.
You know, taking somebody's lunch money, you know. No, we didn't. You know, that was about as far as we ever went, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so you were basically kind of a bit of a ruffian up until high school. So
yeah.
What happened after that? You made a leap to Wall Street somehow. What did you go to school? How did all of that happen?
Yeah, NYU, and mm-hmm. I kind of went at night, and I worked. I was working as a messenger for one of the Wall Street firms, and I kind of got my, you know, my I got into the door that way. And at that time, it was almost completely Ivy League.
Mm.
So you really had to, you know, you really had to know what you were doing, or you really had to make a, you know, yeah, I mean, to stay or to move up. I didn't move up, but I had all these friends who, or friends from childhood who were now making a lot of money. And they didn't know what to do with their money, but they wanted to do legal things with their money. So, you know, we started an investment firm and kind of went from there.
Okay.
Yeah. I couldn't find anybody, you know, that was foolish enough to, you know, to put me in a position of responsibility. So I had to start my own company, you know.
You had to do, and you were very resourceful, obviously. From
Well, you know, you learn to hustle.
Yeah.
You know, when you're kind of alone, you kind of learn to hustle.
So you think that's a good placement for someone that knows how to hustle, just to transition to kind of a Wall Street career?
No. Well, it probably is now, because I think, you know, we've obviously proved that the guys in Wall Street now aren't very good criminals. So
yeah.
You know, maybe we need some pros, you know?
What a situation.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking to J.D. Seamus. He is the author of Last Call, and you can find out more about J.D. through his website, jdseamusbooks.com. Well, what do you think about what's happened right now and basically the aftermath?
I think what's happened is we've kind of gone to actuarials with computers, you know, who kind of, I mean, it's almost a situation like you're doing quick picks for the lotto or something now. You know, they've developed these derivatives who, you know, nobody wins, nobody loses, supposedly, but everybody loses, you know.
Mm.
Nobody really understands what in the hell they're selling anymore. So, I mean, back in the old days when I was, you know, working on the street, or actually when I was running the mutual funds and everything, we just, you know, I mean, you were betting on stocks, you were playing options and things like that. Now, I don't know what they're doing. I don't think they know what they're doing, you know.
So back then it was more something concrete, some kind of currency.
Yeah,
word
concrete.
Now.
I mean, you buy a stock, you know what you have. You know,
yeah.
You hope that the CPA firms weren't lying, and half the times I think they were, with Enron and all those guys. But yeah, you have something concrete. Now you're betting on derivatives, and you know, if neither side really knows what they're actually buying. You know, it's crazy.
It really seems like a system like that is just bound to fail at some point.
And it did.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. You know, it's like the, you know, I mean, the other side of the mortgage side of it, you know, that really didn't help anything at all. It was good intentions. We wanted everyone to, you know, to live the American dream and own a home. But, you know, we didn't really think that thing completely through, that not everybody could afford a home in America.
Right.
So we made it just so easy where anybody could, you know, could I guess qualify for a home, but we didn't think it through any further that you also have to pay for that home.
Pay for it, right?
Well,
right.
Yeah, so it seems like it's been, you know, it's been kind of brainless here, but you know, I'm sure it'll turn around now.
Well, what do you think is in the future for us, for Wall Street, for the mortgage situation, and really the auto industry now too?
I don't, you know, I think we've gotten away from selling what our customers want. That's the car business. You know, for a long time our quality was terrible. I think the quality is a lot better now, and I think they're trying. And I think some of the hybrids and everything that are coming out of Detroit now, or will be coming out of Detroit now, are probably ahead of the industry. But you know, we should have done that 5 years ago. You know, we just didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, unfortunately, I think the unions helped the country grow, but they became, they became a thing of the past, but they're still alive, you know. So I don't know. It's that's a tough situation. They have to be more competitive, and they're just too fat to be competitive now.
Mm-hmm.
Wall Street, I think, is gonna go back to old school where you're actually selling tangibles. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, and where both sides know exactly what they're buying. If I'm buying shares of GE, I know what I'm getting. You know.
Mm.
The mortgage industry, I think, you know, what's going to happen is we're going to go back to the old traditional thing where, you know, for 20% down, they'll finance 80% of, you know,
mm-hmm.
like we've always bought homes in the past, you know.
Yeah.
But I think we're just going to kind of forget what we did, or hopefully not never forget what we did, but we're going to go back to where we were five, 10 years ago.
Wake up a little bit out of the illusion and get back into reality.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. You know, with all of the experience you had in Wall Street and with your past, you know, I want to talk again a little bit towards the characters in your book and how, you know, some of these are pretty shady characters, and so I want to know who in particular maybe is popping up in your first book and will pop up in later books that we may know about, if there's any.
Okay, yeah, Nathan will be back, and Terry will be back. As a matter of fact, I'm doing edit number 4 now on the sequel, so I kind of know who's coming back. Most of the major characters, just about all the model, Julie, the real estate person, although she's losing her boyfriend. And Ray, you know, you got to have the used car guy.
There's one in every bar.
Oh, yeah, there's one in every. the well-dressed Italian with all the, you know, all the gold and everything.
Yeah.
With plaids and solids, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, they'll all come back, and the next book is, you know, we're going to deal with kind of dark subjects again. It's going to be, it's actually going to a story about a high school girl who's trying to get along, new to the area, and is at a party, and someone slips her a date rape drug, and she's violently raped by a lot of people,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's a connection to the bar in New York, so they get involved in it. The police won't do anything about it, you know, and they discover, you know. Two-thirds of the way through the book that the police in that area are crooked, and so they go after the crooked cops.
Mm-hmm. And this is in book 2?
This is in book 2, and I don't know what the title's going to be yet. Everything, I think, Family Retribution.
Oh.
But that's going to turn in, with all those people, and, you get Lou the bartender, the Irish immigrant, bartender, and the new people that own Jimmy's Bar, they're all kind of intertwined. So the gang is going to ride again, you know.
So it's really, your books are a lot about friendship.
They all are, because I think that's what everything is based on. I mean, that's always been my strong suit and my hot button, you know.
Yeah. So do you still associate with some of the people that you used to call your friends?
I do. I actually do. I get, a lot of them are dead now, unfortunately, but, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I stay fairly close to some of the guys. So my picture is probably, in DEA and in the FBI files as some idiot meeting somebody at the airport and going to dinner, you know.
Oh, that's funny. But you're leading a clean life now.
I'm so clean. It's pathetic.
Well, I have to say, I saw on a blog of yours somewhere that you recently took a trip down to Key West.
I did, yeah.
So you're
I enjoyed
big,
it.
Yeah, it sounds like you're a big fan of that area.
I thought it was. I had just had so much fun down there. We did, the Duval Street crawl, and my wife and I for 2 weeks. We were trying to get away from the Central Florida area and bike week, but we ended up. Yeah, it was fun because we ended up doing. We were sitting all this information. We had friends that were coming after us, so we're sitting all these places, the restaurants and all that, and so it was. We just acted like, I guess, food critics or whatever. We had so much fun. But that's just such a unique area,
Yes. Yeah, it is. Well, and you kind of live pretty close, so you can go down there quite often.
We can. But we've got a, you know, we've got a, I love to travel, but I love to travel for fun. So we've got a really neat thing where we're going with a bunch of people that we went to China with a couple of years ago.
Mm.
We're kind of reuniting with them, and we're doing a European, you know, riverboat cruise from where from Prague to Paris.
Wow.
That's a 2 week. We're doing that in June, and then my wife and I are doing we love Italy, especially northern Italy. So we're doing 16 days and kind of that one's a bus tour, but you know, just kind of touring northern Italy, and that's in September.
That's great.
So we try to do 2 trips a year, and our 2 this year really got close together. So
that is so exciting. Will you do any book promo while you're on your trip?
I have to, you know, to get the tax write-offs. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, so you know, you'll look for somebody in Prague, you know, in the next. I'm gonna have to squeeze that in somehow. You
check
know.
Out a bookstore in Prague.
Yeah,
what can happen there?
What can happen there, right?
Well, so what are your family and friends saying about your new career as a writer and with this first book?
They love it. I mean, they absolutely love it. You know, they all want freebies and freebies for their friends. So, you know, I'm actually giving away more books than you know than I'm selling. Now, we're actually selling pretty good right now, but. It's just a slow trog, but it's my brother, you know, I need one for me. And then I've got 2 guys at work and then, you know, my pastor at the church and this and that, and we're in a high rise on the ocean. And so naturally everybody here has to come in. They expect, you know, a free book. So I don't think anybody, you know, all my friends aren't buying anything. So it's really the public that's saving me on this deal, you know?
That's so funny. You have to ask them for some donations.
They need to do something. You know? I actually, for this BEA, I had some T-shirts printed up. I had like 50 T-shirts I was going to kind of give out to anybody who was kind enough to say something nice and ask me, you know, to sign the book. But then I've got like 4 left now, you know, after my brother visited.
Yep.
And then the guys in the building all wanted a T-shirt. I have nothing. I have 4.
Tell them
I have
all
4
that.
And one of them's a small, you know?
Oh, yeah. Tell them that's their Christmas present. Premature Christmas present.
Premature Christmas present. That's right.
Well, how are you finding the whole publicity and marketing end of it? You know, I hear from a lot of authors that it's way more than they expect.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I thought, number one, I thought a first-time author was going to be treated fairly in the bookstores, and you aren't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, everybody has their, you know, their people from the big publishing houses, and that's all they want to talk about. And, you know, thankfully, there are sites like yours, and I'm certainly a big fan of Reader Views. But, I mean, you guys are some of the few people who actually give us a break, you
mm-hmm,
know.
Mm-hmm.
And there are really, and I'm not tooting my own horn, certainly, but there are some really good authors. There are people that I've met out there that are so much better, I think, than a lot of the drivel that we're being forced on, you know, that's being forced on the general public.
I think it's a really good point. And unfortunately, you know, you have to do a little bit of footwork to find those authors. Whether
you really do.
Yeah,
really
online
do.
Or looking, going to your local bookstore and really looking what's on the shelf.
You really do, because you know, I'm selling to Barnes & Noble, but they don't stock them in their, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing that everybody else runs into, where Books a Million or whoever,
mm-hmm.
or Borders, you don't know whether, you know, you're going to get a check from them or not. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
but you know, I'm selling to, and everybody says, well, I can't find your book. And, well, you know, it's supposed to be, you have to ask the guy at Barnes & Noble to order it. You know, I might as well be selling on the Internet, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
I guess that's what happens. And I, you know, you kind of dream the old Hollywood thing where after a while, you know, you become this big famous person and you don't need Barnes & Noble, but you know, you always will, you know.
Right.
And Amazon and I don't, you know, the 800-pound gorilla, you don't know where that's going. There are all kind of suits going back and forth, and I don't even understand them, you know.
Well, so will any of what you've learned so far change up how you approach your next book?
It will.
Mm-hmm.
I think it takes probably, well, I, you know, really to find guys like you, your site, and to find, you know, I mean, the little vowel people, the, you know, New England Book Association and
mm-hmm.
the Southern Books Association, you know, you just it takes a long time to find those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But once you find them, then you can sell, you know, if you're talented, if you're, if you've got something to sell, you know, you can sell.
Yeah.
But it just takes a while. You know, you really, this first year is just kind of, you know.
And you really
it's
have
really,
to.
It's really learning. Yeah.
It's a big learning curve. And, you know, the way the whole industry is now, you really have to know how to navigate the Internet.
You do, because that's kind of the equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where you get, you're going to get treated, I guess, a lot closer to normal than certainly you are in the, in, you know. And that's why all these publishers are going out of business. They don't really know how to exist in the real world.
Yeah.
But the real world now is the Internet, I guess, you know, so you have to do that.
Everything is changing so quickly.
It is, and I can't imagine. I'm just glad that when I, you know, came out and started writing, I'm glad the Internet was here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, when can we expect the sequel, book two?
Well, everybody tells me, you know, my PR person and everybody, that you're supposed to wait. It's cast in concrete. You're supposed to wait 13 months in between books. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to get it out, you know, probably, I would love to get it out for Christmas, but, you know, nobody wants to do that. So it's probably going to be after the first of the year.
For the first of the year.
Yeah, and we do the sequel. And then I have like two other books back there that are actually really my favorites, so.
Well, the pace at which you write, I think you could probably easily do a book a year.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Because I've got, you know, the next 5 years are taken care of. I want to do some fresh stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Really. Well, so with this.
See, I have to do fresh stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, a creative person, I mean, you have to, and you want that to be out there. So for,
and that is so much fun. That's so much fun. But I'm finding now that I'm spending more time on the marketing side.
Of this book that was years ago.
Yeah. I have to go back and reread it or reread places, you know, parts of it.
Yeah, like who was in that book again?
Yeah, I can't remember. Like I said, the model of the law. I couldn't remember her name.
Oh gosh, that's so funny. Well, it sounds like we can really expect a lot of books in the future from you. This is kind of a career choice at this point in your life as you've retired from your dealings at Wall Street.
It is. It really is. And, you know, hopefully, you know, when I'm a big established star, I still want to be on Read Reviews, though, you know.
Please come back.
We have to do this at least annually, you know.
Definitely. Oh, I look forward to it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So do I.
Yes. Well, I want to make sure we mention your website. It's jdsemusbooks.com.
Correct.
And can Last Call be purchased through there or just info on it?
Info on it, and I put buttons. You know, you can go to Amazon or a couple other places. I looked at PayPal and all that stuff, and I didn't want to get involved in that.
Yeah, I understand. Keep it simple.
Keep it simple. Yeah, and I did my preview with you guys, and it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can ever figure out how to link it to the site, I'll have that.
Cut and paste.
Okay.
Oh, what a great, great time today. Thank you for joining us, JD.
Thank you for having me.
Really, it's been wonderful. Did you have any final thoughts you wanted to share with our audience before we let you go?
I want my books always to, you know, I want my readers to have as much fun reading my books as I did writing them. And I think if that happens, then the whole thing is successful.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's happening, so you are successful.
Well, thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you, JD. We'll talk again.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, listeners, that's been J.D. Seamus, and his first book, Last Call, is out now. You can find out more about J.D. through his website, jdsemusbooks.com, and do keep an eye out for this author. He definitely has some books in the future and a great, great writing voice, so keep an eye out for him. Well, I want to thank you for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.